This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. Not illegal, but definitely not okay. That's the Solicitor General's take on Scott Morrison's secret ministerial appointments. The federal government says there'll now be an inquiry into the matter, but how should these loopholes be closed? Political reporter Claudia Long has more from Parliament House.
Morning.
Whatever form this inquiry takes, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese clearly wants a lot of questions answered.
Why this occurred, how it occurred, who knew about it occurring, what the implications are for our parliamentary system.
While a prominent lawyer will lead it, it's not clear if the inquiry will have the power to compel witnesses to appear, or if it'll be holding hearings in public. Dr. Mary Crawford from the Queensland University of Technology wants it to tackle issues around transparency and accountability.
The inquiry will need to find a way so that we know who relevant ministers are. Because after all, you cannot hold someone to account if you don't know who they are.
While the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet has now been directed to help make sure any future ministerial appointments are published, she wants some stronger rules.
We really need to find some ways of ensuring that, yes, all of these appointments need to be revealed to everybody. We have to have something that says this cannot happen without public acknowledgement or an exposure to public documents.
Dr. Jill Shepherd from the Australian National University says Scott Morrison's multiple ministries have raised questions about what kind of political system we want.
It would be a real shift for Australian politics if we take that opportunity away from politicians. If we start writing down everything, that's a real change to how we govern in Australia. We do have a very convention-heavy system. We do have to really ask at the moment what kind of future political system we want.
And she says setting any conventions in stone could be a case of becoming careful what you wish for.
Any future government would be probably, you know, in dangerous territory if they start restricting what they can do, if they bed some of these conventions down in writing, that will have consequences for them in the future. It was the kind of flexibility that a government requires when they are dealing with rapidly changing events. And the problem here was the secrecy.
The Solicitor General has recommended putting new appointments on ministry lists, department websites, and in the Government Gazette.
Those fairly minimal suggestions that the Solicitor General has made are easy to implement through statute. They don't have to go through constitutional change.
The Greens are demanding the inquiry be given the powers of a royal commission. Senator David Shoebridge is the justice spokesman.
That means powers to compel the production of documents and, critically, to compel the production of witnesses.
But Dr. Jill Shepherd says that won't necessarily help.
I think we could turn this into a bit of a kangaroo court and have it drag on for a long time. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be useful.
The Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet is also conducting a separate investigation into the appointments.
Claudia Long there. Media magnate Lachlan Murdoch's taken the extraordinary action of suing the online news site Crikey after an article linked the Murdoch family to last year's deadly attack on the US Capitol building. Mr. Murdoch has launched defamation proceedings in the federal court after Crikey's editor and publisher publicly challenged the multi-billionaire to sue. For more on this, I spoke earlier with our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, just explain why Lachlan Murdoch has decided to sue.
Well, good morning, Sabra. This is a small Australian news site, Crikey, owned by private media, taking on the financial firepower of the Murdoch empire. Now, this goes back to an analysis piece in June by Crikey's political editor, Bernard Keane, which named the Murdochs as, quote, unindicted co-conspirators in the January 6 attacks on the US Capitol, carried out by supporters of the former US President Donald Trump, allegedly fueled by the power of Fox News. The article's now back on the Crikey website after being originally removed. The legal letters have been going back and forth, but lawyers for Lachlan Murdoch, who's chief executive of Fox Corporation and co-chairman of News Corporation, filed a statement of claim in the federal court late yesterday. That was after Crikey urged him to sue, taking out a full-page advertisement in the New York Times and publishing a trail of legal correspondence that had been previously secret. Group. Crikey's lawyers say the article did not directly refer to Lachlan Murdoch, but Mr Murdoch's lawyers say the article wrongly suggested that he was a co-conspirator in a plot with Donald Trump, and that was likely to cause serious harm to his reputation because of, quote, allegations of criminality.
This is shaping up to be a potentially expensive legal battle. How's Crikey responded?
Sabra, Crikey's editor-in-chief Peter Frey is making no apologies, saying this is a matter of free press and the public's right to know, and that made him decide not to settle with Mr Murdoch. Peter Frey spoke on RN Drive.
Well, I think it's very clear that Fox News has played a very significant role in the in what happened in January the 6th and the lead-up to January 6th, and amplifying, as, for instance, Four Corners rightly put it, you know, that they're amplifying what's called the big lie, that the election was stolen. So, you know, I think it's easy to join the dots and say that Fox News amplified the big lie that Trump and his people was putting around. And therefore, I think it's entirely relevant to mention Murdoch in relation to Fox News in such a story.
It's Crikey editor-in-chief Peter Frey. Peter, how unusual is it for one media organisation to sue another?
Well, it is pretty unusual for this sort of action to be taken, noting that this is being launched by Lachlan Murdoch rather than his father, Rupert, who has been reluctant in the past to take on defamation proceedings. Now, this case will be closely watched, and it could be a test of new defamation laws in force across much of Australia, and that includes a public interest-style defence that's aimed in some way to protect investigative journalism.
Peter Ryan there. Farmers are suggesting the pay deals they offer workers should include the non-monetary benefits they provide, like food and accommodation. The National Farmers Federation is putting forward the proposed changes to industrial relations laws ahead of next week's job summit. The lobby group says current rules are a minefield, but one expert is urging caution, as John Daly reports.
So down at Grantham tomorrow, Adelina. Yeah. Okay, Megan.
The work never stops on this farm at Kambuya on Queensland's Darling Downs. And Story's farming business grows, picks and processes lettuce, carrots, beetroot and spinach. The weather, of course, can be unpredictable. And she says that's hard to navigate when there are strict rules and conditions for her workers.
The biggest difficulty we have is that Mother Nature is our boss. And if we need the flexibility in hours of work regarding starting times or working weekends because we have, for example, a weather event, it's very difficult under the award to actually utilise that in a cost-effective manner.
She'd like the industrial relations system to be more flexible.
Having that ability with flexibility is incredibly important because it tailors to the business.
The National Farmers Federation says the complexity of the industrial relations system is one of the challenges to tackling labour shortages, and simplifying it is one of the 40 recommendations it's made ahead of next week's job summit. The president is Fiona Simpson.
And so if we have a maze of different rules, regulations, it almost becomes a minefield for a small business employer, a farmer who's often under stress, wanting to do the right thing to actually get it right.
Fiona Simpson says enterprise bargaining, among other things, needs an overhaul.
Often employees are actually based outside cities and may receive a number of non-monetary benefits in the form of accommodation or food or electricity or fuel. Then we should be able to take those sorts of non-monetary benefits into account when we're looking at enterprise bargaining as well.
Reports have noted there's been an issue with non-compliance within the industry when it comes to labour. So is deregulation the answer then?
Well, what we need to do is to have a system that actually works. And, you know, I think industry has to be supported for stepping up and trying to stamp out the incidents, which are very disappointing, that occur. But by and large, we know that most farmers do the right thing.
University of Adelaide Associate Law Professor Joanna Howe led a two-year inquiry looking at labour issues on farms. She has her doubts about deregulation.
It's all well and good to ask for the system to be simplified, but the industry itself and the NFF needs to take ownership of the fact that report after report has found that there is a problem with non-compliance with labour standards on farms. If they're asking for greater deregulation, this doesn't add up to what the research has found, which is that the farm industry actually needs greater regulation in order to ensure that workers are not being exploited.
The National Farmers Federation says while it wants its concerns addressed, it doesn't want to weaken worker protection or penalties for wrongdoing.
John Daly there. Today marks 6 months since peace was shattered in Ukraine. Cities, towns and villages have been flattened during the Russian invasion. The UN estimates at least 12 million people have been forced from their homes, and there's no end in sight. Europe correspondent Isabella Higgins has more.
Back in February, residents in the West Ukrainian city of Lviv were preparing for the worst. Men, women and teenagers were learning how to shoot in the local school basement. No one knew at the time, but these were some of the last moments of peace in Ukraine. On that day, I met Taras Rostovich. Then he was a 52-year-old IT manager. He was signing up for Ukraine's army reserves in Lviv.
Worry about the future of my sons, my wife, and that's why I'm here.
As we said goodbye, he shook my hand and told me he had a bad feeling about what was to come, but he hoped he was wrong. Hours later, the country's worst fears were realised. Ukraine was at war. Russia's military were coming from the air, land and sea. Thousands of Ukrainians were being called upon to fight. Taras Rostovich was one of them. We met again just 24 hours later. This time he was in his army greens.
I mean, we are fighting for our life, we are fighting for our freedom, we are fighting for our dignity and for our way of life.
Soon after, Taras was sent to fight in the country's eastern Donbass region. He hasn't seen his family in about 4 months. He's shaved his head and has lost 20 kilograms. He took time out from his duties on the front line to speak to me about the last 6 months of his life.
You miss the family and everything. We are taking every precautions which are possible to protect our lives. But when the rocket comes, there is very little you can do about it.
The war is thought to have forced about a third of Ukrainians from their homes. Irina Stepanova is one of them.
I never can't imagine that I will be refugee. So it's 6 months of fear, of pain, and of big nothing, because it doesn't look like a full life.
She's living with a sponsor family in London with her mum. Her husband stayed to fight.
We was just married, and in our plan it was try to have babies the spring. And now I feel like war took this chance.
And now, like so many other Ukrainians, she only has one dream for her future.
I dream about freedom for Ukraine, our victory. I hope to return home.
This is Isabella Higgins reporting for AM.
It's the third year of the pandemic and almost 10 million COVID cases have been reported in Australia. It's estimated 1 to 5% of all people have prolonged symptoms, but we're still only just beginning to understand the consequences of long COVID. Patients and doctors are urging the federal government to move faster on funding research and treatment, as Annie Guest reports.
After school, Nada Hamed's kids are keen to talk to their sick mum as she lies on the couch. It's a very different reception to the one the long COVID sufferer describes getting from some health professionals.
And all of these minimising and dismissive attitudes were coming through, and I couldn't understand why.
As a specialist doctor in haematology, she feels lucky to have medical knowledge. But with research showing more women than men get long COVID, she fears others may struggle.
And I worry a lot about this becoming a situation in long COVID where it is underfunded, underrecognized, unheard, because women have a harder time being heard in the medical context, amongst other things.
Dr. Hamed developed prolonged symptoms after catching COVID-19 twice earlier this year.
And I couldn't stand up for more than a minute or two before I would lose consciousness or just drop to the ground.
Being advised to use a wheelie walker was one of many shocks.
I'm in the medical field. I know so many specialists as colleagues, and I'm still having trouble getting access to you know, medical appointments.
It doesn't surprise Professor Jason Kovovich from St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney.
There are long wait times to get into the clinic. It's in the order of several months. And I think there's a limited number of long COVID clinics around, but the demand is clearly huge.
The cardiologist says some of that demand is from patients whose pre-existing heart disease has worsened with COVID, but also new patients who've developed heart problems after having it.
So each begets the other. COVID begets these comorbidities, and the comorbidities also beget a more severe infection.
The Bureau of Statistics recently reported heart disease is behind a spike in deaths from non-COVID causes, along with diabetes and dementia. Professor Kovacic thinks it's likely some had COVID-19 previously.
This may be the tip of an iceberg that we're just seeing a glimpse of here. I think this underscores the fact that we're still just beginning to understand all the symptoms and features of long COVID.
Prior to the federal election, Labor promised to establish a Centre for Disease Control. Professor Kovacic wants to see greater urgency.
Resourcing our COVID clinics, but also increasing those research efforts will be critical.
In a statement, the Federal Health Department says the government is funding research to better understand long COVID, adding that the College of GPs is updating guidelines on long COVID patient care and that various rebates may be available for GP, specialist and allied health treatment.
Annie Guest reporting. New data shows one in four Australian companies aren't doing the bare minimum when it comes to keeping their supply chains free of slavery. It comes as one of the country's biggest corporations is hit with legal proceedings, alleging it knowingly profited from forced labour in Malaysia. National Business reporter Amelia Turzon has more.
For years, Bangladeshi migrant Shuvo worked 11-hour days in a Malaysian factory making latex gloves. The boxes were clearly marked with the logo of Australian company Ansell.
If we didn't want to work, the supervisors used violence and threatened to send us home. I didn't get time to eat. I couldn't go to the washroom. There were days when I didn't have breakfast or lunch. I couldn't take it. I could feel tears coming out of my eyes.
Shuvo is one of 13 men who are now taking legal action in a United States court against Ansell and an American brand. They allege they knowingly profited from their exploitation by subcontracting out the manufacturing to a Malaysian company, Brightway. Ansell says the case is without merit and that it condemns modern-day slavery. Here in Australia, one of Ansell's biggest customers is worried.
To hear of these allegations is extremely distressing.
St Vincent's Health Australia buys Ansell gloves for its hospitals and its aged care homes. Spokesperson David Factor says they've been raising concerns with Ansell about Malaysia's glove industry for 5 years.
We're actually not just raising paper complaints with Ansell. We're actually speaking with our actions and reorientating our business towards suppliers that can be trusted.
Detecting whether products coming into Australia are being produced by exploited workers is very difficult. The acting legal director of the Human Rights Law Centre, Freya Dinshaw, says there's also no mechanism to ban products that are coming from specific factories.
Any food that you're eating, any good that you're purchasing from the supermarket could potentially be linked to forced labour, but there are some really key areas of concern.
In Australia, companies that turn over more than $100 million a year have to make a yearly statement about their supply chain and what they're doing to address modern-day slavery concerns. However, fresh data from the Attorney General's department shows that 28% aren't even meeting that basic obligation.
Many people might be surprised to know there's no real ramifications if you fail to put in a slavery statement or if you acknowledge that there are modern slavery risks but you don't actually take meaningful action to address those risks.
Back home in Bangladesh, Shuvo has a message for Ansell.
I would tell them what happened to me. I would ask them to address this. We had a dream that our lives would change for the better. That dream was shattered.
He is now hoping that the legal action will help other workers who are facing a similar situation.
Amelia Turzon reporting. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast.
Right now, there's at least one job vacancy for every person who's unemployed in Australia. But while everyone who wants a job could have one, wages are falling way behind inflation, meaning making ends meet is getting much harder. Today, business editor Ian Verinder on next week's Job Summit and if it will lead to more money in our pockets. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.